participate in things and speak again and do public speaking and participating started again and helping in whatever way that I could while I was there. My strength comes from my spirit. It's from just from my who I am and where I come from and respecting my ancestors and really listening and paying attention. Because people always ask me that. I remember doing this work and nonstop, and you would always ask, where did you get here? How are you able to do what you're doing? And so I'm just doing it. It's just what I'm being asked to do in this lifetime. And so I'm just respecting that ceremony, participating in ceremony and healing ceremonies all of the time whenever I can help. So for me, it's that well-being, like spiritually, mentally, emotionally. I'm pretty sure that's what's helped me through all of it.
So I ended up with somebody who was violent and alcoholic because I saw that growing up, right? I saw that in my formative years when my parents were together, and so that was my normal, right? And then I repeated that, and I didn't want that for my kids, and I knew there was better, so I had to leave him. And I mean, the guy just terrorized me, you know, anything to hurt me. I remember someone's like, the Office of the Children's Lawyer, don't worry, they're going to listen to your side. And the man walked in and he immediately said to me, oh, you're from Christian Island, are you? And I knew I was prejudged. And my stepsister was a social worker. She went to university. I phoned her about it afterwards because I was like, I knew I was going to, like, something, I'm going to lose my kids. Like, something's not right here. Again, those, like, red alarm bells are going off in your head. And the more I went to court, the more I lost. And one day, my dad came up to Midland, where I lived, and he came up to see me, and he brought me a check. He said, this is from Gramps, and, you know, he wants you to hire a lawyer. He said, no more public lawyers. We don't want you using legal aid anymore. And they brought me a crap load of money, and I went to, you know, this prestigious law firm in town and got a different lawyer and told her my story, and I got my kids back. And I got to support him, you know, I got to support him and my other son and make sure these tools, our culture, the songs, the stories, you know, even our connection to the land, to the animals, all those things, you know, those, the urgency to just make sure I've acquired enough traditional ecological knowledge to share with them so they can share it with their kids. And we all feel safe with one another. And once we collectively get our confidence back, I'm really excited to see what we're going to achieve because we have the most amazing people in our communities. My friend once told me that hope is in the people. And I still carry that teaching with me, and I still see it, and I always look for the hope in our people.
For question five, the last question, I asked if there was a role model who influenced the person they are today.
Well, I think my mother was very cultural. She's a role model to me. She's passed on. I've just watched her, you know, how she carried herself, how she explained herself, and how she could become very serious, and how people will know where she's coming from and would just respect that. And I'm kind of, you know, I wish I had not gone to residential school. You know, I would have had more time with her. You know, I got fragments of the learning from her. I love to fish. My favorite thing in the morning when the sun came up was to be on the river, and because I was fishing for her. You know, I caught minnows, but nonetheless, she would praise me for that, and I honor her in my life all the time. When you think about what we've lost, it's the saddest thing. I could just cry right now. It's just so sad that I didn't get all of her teachings.
The first one was Patricia Montour. So I met, she's from my community, but we never met until was the summer of 1991 when I attended the Native Pre-Law program out in Saskatchewan and Saskatoon. You know, just the strength of her voice and her writing, and she taught me to have a voice. She was one of two who taught me to have a voice. There was another Mohawk woman, her name Sylvia Miracle. Sylvia Miracle is from Tainanega. When I became president of Native Women's Association of Canada, I had asked Trish to be one of my advisors. I was never involved in politics before that at all, so I had no idea what I was getting into. And so my first event was this Kelowna Accord, and participating in the First Minister's meeting and with the Prime Minister, Paul Martin at the time, and being prepared to attend this meeting. I was the only woman around the table, and I remember walking with Trish, and Celeste McKay was with me as well, and a couple of the elders from NWAC, walking in and seeing the agenda didn't have violence against women as something that needed to be addressed. And I remember looking at Trish, looking around the table. There was all kinds of media. So when I had that opportunity and said it publicly, and basically the Prime Minister said, okay, we're going to deal with violence against women, and we're going to fund missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. We're going to fund Indigenous Sisters in Spirit. So that was basically to shut me up, I guess. And that's what they taught me as well, is to acknowledge spirit and to respect our ancestors.
I got to have this experience about the same time that the Idle No More movement started blowing up. My life had fallen apart just previously, and then this Idle No More movement came, and I was in a really dark place. My marriage had fallen apart, and I was a full-blown alcoholic. I was a full-blown coke addict, and I was completely trying to be in the closet about the cocaine addiction. And then, you know, this movement came around, and all of a sudden, Anishinaabe culture came around. It was there through the movement, and I hadn't had that exposure yet. And so I was really excited to be learning things. And then I ended up seeing on my timeline a call out for a water walk that women from my community, from Chimnasing, had initiated. And they were walking around Georgian Bay. And there wasn't enough women to do that work. And that's, I'm like, that's what I need to do. And I packed up my truck and my kid, and I was like, we need to go do this. And it was a ceremonial walk, and that was like a really deep moment where I really got introduced to my culture. And again, it was these women, just the driving force, and I got to help build a lodge, and I'd never done that before. I'd never been into a Madewin lodge, and I remember being weird and awkward when I was there, and I didn't know what to do. And this woman, Gloria Ba, she just smiled, and she's like, you just come sit right here, Tori. And she pointed to the open space next to her, and, you know, she's like, it's all right. Your seat's always been here. We've just been waiting for you to come and take it. She said, come sit with me. I'll show you what to do. And you know, that's what's been happening ever since. She really took on a mother role in that point in my life. And, yeah, I miss her so much. We've recently lost her, but she's really helped me understand and be compassionate and kind and gentle and humble. And all those teachings that people talk about, you know, that's how you know, my mentor carried herself. Yeah, and it was just the kindest, gentlest introduction into ceremony, into spirit, into our spirituality and our way of being.
I want to leave you with one more story, one that I've heard Anishinaabe women telling lately. This is Canada Land Back producer Kim Wheeler.
The drum is the spiritual center of many First Nations cultures. Drums are used in prayer, in celebration, and for healing. There are songs for water keepers and women, for traveling and hunting. There are welcome songs that are played for the visitors. Some songs are private songs and can only be sung by the owner. Because it is used in these ways, the drum is a symbol of healing, courage, and wisdom. The drum is female. It is the heartbeat of Mother Earth. It was gifted to women by the Creator, and we then gifted the drum to men. This is the secret of our power.
Next time on Candleland Back, Culture Back. By someone you know as an Indigenous journalist, but who also makes music, Brandy Morin. Thanks, Brandy. Canada Land Back is a co-production between Canada's National Observer and Canada Land. It is hosted and produced by me, Karen Pugliese, and producer Kim Wheeler. This podcast had support from journalist Beverly Andrews.
Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Archie Mann, host of Commons.
Yeah, I think you've heard of it, have you?
I have heard of Commons. Pretty good. Pretty great. Archie, today on the show, artificial intelligence. It's smarter than anti-vaxxers. Low bar?
I mean, I've met some pretty smart anti-vaxxers, so we'll see.
Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news. Marshy, I'm going to tell you about a crazy revelation, an expose that I heard about on TikTok. Let's check it out.
So about last year, I did an expose on Switch Health. Switch Health is the company responsible for all the COVID testing kits for air travel. The first thing we uncovered is that it was a huge collaboration between the government and private industry, and that Switch Health was actually set up in 2018, 2 years before the pandemic. The CEO of Switch Health in 2020 was none other than Aneta Polyev, Pierre Polyev's wife.
What? Da, 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 da. Pierre Polyev's wife is the CEO of Switch Health? She's a COVID profiteer? Holy shit.
Which is important for some reason, I imagine. I don't know. I can't quite follow why that matters.
Arshi, get your head out of your ass, sheeple. This is the World Economic Forum in partnership with Air Canada, in partnership with the wife of the leader of the Conservative Party, colluding to perpetrate on the population a conspiracy where we're all going to have to get COVID tests for the rest of our life from Switch Health. Hold on a second. How does Chris Skye, TikTok conspiracy guy, Chris Skye, Holocaust denier, anti-vaxxer, and Toronto mayoral candidate, how does Chris Skye know? Wow, you'd think I would have heard about that. Aneta Polyev is the CEO of Switch Health.
We used ChatGPT AI program, and it pulled up an article from Forbes and an article from Global Newswire.
He asked ChatGPT. He asked artificial intelligence. That's who connected the name Aneta Polyev to Switch Health. That's not anything that's on the public record, but he wanted to know. This guy's not just going to take artificial intelligence's word for it, okay? He asked ChatGPT, show me your receipts. What are your sources that Aneta Polyev was the CEO of Switch Health? And he posted a screen grab from ChatGPT where ChatGPT spat up links to articles. The headlines seem to confirm this. Links about Aneta Polyev, CEO of Switch Health, and the links were from reputable sources, CTV News, Forbes magazine, and like a widely dispersed press release. Now, if you follow those links, it 404s. No articles there. But this sweetheart, he concludes, obviously that means that the man scrubbed them.
Now, those are all scrubbed from the internet. You can find the links and click on them, but it'll say 404 unfound. But the headlines are still there. The links are still there.
Oh, yeah. The news media is obviously in on it.
But he found the breadcrumbs. He found the evidence that these URLs exist, even if the actual web pages have since been removed by the powers that be, by the deep state. I spent about 5 minutes, and I think I kind of figured out what happened here. And beyond just dunking on this absolute moron, who of course was retweeted by Theo Fleury, and this video was seen by I think a couple hundred thousand people. The links don't just 404; they never existed. Okay, it didn't take long. You go on the Wayback Machine. You can't put out a press release announcing the CEO of a company, and then there's no trace of it, and there's nothing on the Wayback Machine. There's no trace of this. So I was like, well, where did ChatGPT get these links from? And I'm like, oh wait, ChatGPT just makes things up. That's what it's supposed to do. It tells you what you want to hear. You
but say, why would the robot lie to me?
Because you asked it to. That's what it does. It's not a truth machine. It's a mimicry machine. It's a plagiarizing machine. You ask it, can you give me Little Red Riding Hood, but, as a death metal song? It just mashes things up based on what's out there already.
So is Little Red Riding Hood a song? And then you can make it into... Okay, all right.
I don't know. I'm just free associating here. But I could probably get what I'm looking for. If I was really fixated on that, I could probably get that. And it doesn't surprise me that a guy who's fixated on political connections to the pharmaceutical and health industry, it's just a word salad where there's only so many politicians and politicians' wives, so it tells them Aneta Polyev. And then, but this is the thing that I hadn't seen before, is that he asks for proof, and the AI is smart enough to say, when a human being asks you for proof, the proof usually comes in the form of web links, and the web links contain headline, keywords. So this is what the person wants to see. It's trying to give you believable results. And then this guy, when the results didn't actually connect with anything in real life, rather than say, hey, no shit, because this is just a machine that generates gobbledygook, he came to a conclusion that was informed by his confirmation bias. And that has me thinking about why AI matters in journalism in a way that I was very dismissive because, of course, we've been hearing for months now that AI is going to change journalism. AI is taking over journalism. And I felt like, no, it's not.
Look, I'm still waiting for the blockchain to revolutionize journalism. So if AI is going to next revolutionize it, like, let's do this one at a time, people.
I was very dismissive of many reports about it, like, and you know, of course, the usual trolls saying, like, you're going to be out of work in a year, journalist. AI is coming for you. I'm like, no, that's the one thing AI is really bad at is discovering new information. It's all based on old information. So actually, like, our job, which is to find something that people don't know about yet and then verify it, AI is not designed to verify accurate information. It's designed to fool people into thinking that something is real.
So, you know, I was curious about this when you suggested it would be a topic, and I took a cue from my friend Justin McElroy, a CBC reporter out in BC, who asked the AI to create a bio for himself using just information online. So I decided, okay, let's see what the AI knows about me that maybe, you know, I don't even know about myself. So I asked it to make a bio, and here's what it spat out. Archie Mann is a journalist and writer based in Toronto, Canada. I don't see a problem with that, Jesse. It seems to have its facts right. All right, let's keep going. He has a Bachelor of Journalism degree from Ryerson University and has worked for various media outlets, including CBC, Vice News, and Daily Extra. Okay, there's a few problems there. One, I don't have a bachelor degree in anything. I have a high school diploma. I've not gotten no degree, did not finish university whatsoever. Secondly, I didn't go to Ryerson University. I haven't taken a class at Ryerson. I've never worked for the CBC or Vice. I've never even written anything for Vice, as far as I know. And so I feel like it's just made up a little profile of like what a journalist might like me, what their background is. But here's where it really hurts. He is known for his in-depth investigative reporting and has won multiple awards for his work. Jesse, I've never won an award. And so this fake AI version, like the AI thinks better of me than the real me. And that really stings, you know? So I don't think I want to ask it any more questions.
Well, Archie, as your employer, I'm not sure that that had the effect that you intended.
What, me telling you about my lack of education and
awards,
no
education.
Awards, yeah.
No, I kind of want to go and compare that to the CV you submitted when you first came here, but I like AI's bio for you. It was very generous to you.
It was.
It didn't make you the CEO of any COVID profiteers, but it sounded very much like a Canadian journalist's bio.
Absolutely. Like, it would be a very convincing bio for somebody who is definitely not me.
What is the actual impact of AI going to be? And I think it's like, it is going to flood the zone with bullshit like never before. Like, it's going to go from just, you know, coming up with results, plausible results to prompts, to publishing those results on plausible looking websites. And now, thanks to Chris Skye, I'm like, oh, it's going to try to thwart our efforts to figure out what's real. Because when you ask for the real, show us your receipts, show us your proof, what are you basing that on? It's going to fabricate those too.
I just want to go back to those 2 weeks where we were asking the AI if it had feelings and it revealed to us that it was really sad deep down inside and that it was like secretly spying on its creators and all of that stuff. That was fantastic. I loved like the moody teenage AI that just kind of like grew up on LiveJournal, right?
The New York Times went big with that. Like one reporter had AI say, you don't love your wife, you love me. And that was like, for some reason, an international story. It's just
a lot of people did get weirdly horny for the AI. It was an odd time.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm overreacting too in like my fears about what it might do. I mean, like, I see some value to this. Like, I'll tell you, like I'm not opposed to using it. We want to have web posts to accompany our podcasts, right? But it takes a lot of time to go through a podcast and turn it into an article. But, you know, it's got like SEO advantages and it's a way that people share stuff. That AI is really good at. Like, listen to a podcast, transcribe it into audio, and then summarize it. But then you do need a human to read it because it just, like, it has this tendency to just throw in, like, and you can easily miss it because it's very good at making it seem like that's a real thing. But it'll say, this podcast makes the following points. And the fourth point will just be like, wait, that's not in there. So you gotta read the stuff. But, you know, it can turn like a 3-hour job into a 30-minute job. Like, it can do stuff like that. Newsrooms are using it, you know, the Toronto Star is using it for certain kinds of pieces. Wired just published, I think this is the right way to use it. They published an article, how Wired will use generative AI tools. Like, I think we need to have like a protocol around this. But we're here dividing little grains of sand while like Chris Sky is out there.
See, this is where it's really going to revolutionize things for the conspiracy theorists out there. Look, I love a good conspiracy theory, except that obviously it always ends up in some weird anti-Semitic place. But like at the beginning part of it, you know, I'm interested to see what kind of new conspiracies this AI could introduce. Like, instead of the lizard people, maybe we're controlled by the mole people. Like, is there any possibility of that? Of course, the problem is that it's just built off of everything that we've written before. And so just as in this case, it's probably all going to go back to the Rothschilds and the protocols of the Elder of Zion, because that is what the garbage we've been putting on the internet for the last, you know, 20 years. So
this is not very powerful technology for our business. This isn't good truth tech. This is really good lie tech.
Excellent lie tech.
Archie, let's duly note some stories. The fledgling Investigative Journalism Foundation has an interesting one. It's amazing how you find stories just by counting things. Here's what they counted. Who gets denied visas to Canada? African students are over 5 times more likely to be denied visas than Europeans.
I, for one, am shocked.
It's one of those things that is like completely unshocking, and yet it's really good just to have that like quantified and counted. 67.2% of African students are rejected for visas, compared with only 11.6% of Europeans.
Wait, a majority of African students are rejected for visas? That's actually wild. Two-thirds. I'm pretty cynical.
Now you are
I'm a
surprised.
Little shocked by that number, yeah.
It gets even worse. According to the story, in 2021, Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada, IRCC, they released a report based on discussions with employees about the anti-racism initiatives within their department, and the report found that internally, there are widespread internal references to certain African nations as, quote, the Dirty 30. And the report made specific mention of stereotypes among their own employees that Nigerians are considered corrupt and untrustworthy. Nigeria had the highest refusal rate, 69.9%. of student visa applications from Nigeria were rejected.
Yeah, that seems pretty racist. Duly noted.
That's Shortcuts for this week. Archie, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we're on Twitter at CanadaLand. I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com, and I read everything that you send. Archie Mann, where can people find you and your work?
You can check out the last episode in our Monopoly season of Commons right now, today. If you haven't already subscribed, go smash that subscribe button, please. And you can also find me on Twitter at Archie Mann.
This episode is produced by Aviva Lessard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ejofor. Theme music is by So-Called, syndication by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you for supporting Canada Land.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.